The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my right, from the Department of English, it's Professor Heather Hill Vasquez.
Hello.
Hello. Do you still have the dictionary that was your cherished childhood toy, or...
I have the condensed one.
Oh,
It came with like a little...
magnifying glass.
Thank you.
Rosetta Stone?
Yeah, it's a two edition. It's very tiny. It's very cool.
That's cool.
It's still at my parents' house. I don't have it here.
Okay.
I should probably have them send it to me, though. I mean,
you could put it like in a plexiglass container and put it up on a shelf with a light on it.
No, use it.
Oh, you want to use it?
Yeah.
Okay.
As a medievalist, sometimes I need to go back and look at, you know, word origins and what things really mean.
That
and
is true.
So on and so forth, and where those words have been used. And context is very important. So
sure.
I should probably have it shipped out here. Although I did not play with it when I was like six. Seven, I think I was, when I was really getting into it.
I was
Thank
at
you
least,
for laughing.
At least second, third grade,
yeah.
You know, before. Continuing around the table, Professor Mara Livesey is here from the Department of Chemistry and Biochemistry. Let's do a little flip side here. So what would have been a cherished childhood book of yours that may or may not have been the dictionary, Mara?
Cherished childhood book.
Like, it could have been a storybook.
Oh, what is it? The that rainbow fish who gives away its...
Rainbow
the sparkly
fish.
Gills. Oh, is it called the rainbow fish?
Yeah, that's good.
Well,
that's
that
a good one.
Book. Yeah.
My kids have that book. They like that book.
It's lovely.
That's nice. I didn't know whether it was going to be... I mean, we've had two of three who have been obsessed with locomotives, and so we, like, have a picture book of, like, the locomotives of 1967, and like that's their favorite book of all time, you know, because they just want to look at the pictures. But Rainbow Fish has a little more English on it. I like that. That works. Professor Dave Chow is here from the College for Creative Studies.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
I'm doing everything I can to follow your lead and dissuade my son from being dedicated towards coming to CCS, but it gets more hardcore every day.
Uh-oh.
Just letting you know.
All right. Well, you could always come teach there.
And then that'd be free tuition.
Yes.
Do you need an organic chemist?
I'm sure we'll figure out. We'll put you
You'll
somewhere.
You'll think of something.
Yeah.
We have been having great discussions on our campus about how it's all hands on deck from our facilities.
Oh, yeah.
Even the VP and the plumber and the electrician, they're all out there with shovels. When
Everyone's
they have
shoveling.
To be, so, yeah.
You know, we have those big yellow containers here that have the salt in them,
mm-hmm.
right? Apparently,
mm-hmm.
when photos are taken for promotional reasons, they have to Photoshop those out because they look so ugly.
But then why not take pictures that don't have them in it?
I don't know. This is what I heard.
Or
this
why not just move them?
Or the idea would be to make, you know, buckets or containers that
or the line of four or five students.
Exactly. The students carrying the 2x4, you know.
It is noticeable because they're bright yellow.
Yes.
Professor Jim Tubbs is here from the Department of Religious Studies.
Hello.
Hello, hello. How are you?
All right, how are you?
Surviving a pretty interesting winter, you know?
Yeah, well.
100 degree swings within 24 hours.
Yes.
And
that's just
Snow
this room.
And rain and...
and nobody still has any idea why we were open the second day of sub-zero temperatures.
Gosh. Yeah, that's... I'm gonna
only
that
school
one
around that
there.
Was.
757 institutions closed. Mm-hmm. And us, and I heard one grade school out in the west side was open for some reason.
And it was colder that day than
the
it was
original
the day before when we were closed.
Yep. Even the post office didn't deliver.
That's right. Well,
that's right.
Or UPS.
When
or
the
FedEx.
Detroit Zoo closes, you know, with their penguin enclosure and polar bears outside, then it's too cold. That's all I know. Holy smokes.
Oh, dear.
Crazy.
And it was 40 degrees colder here than my hometown.
You know, moving here, I learned really quickly to hate the terms Alberta Clipper and Arctic air mass. And now polar vortex is a third I despise.
Blame with Alberta people, why don't you?
I know.
Thanks. Thank you.
It's too much.
Professor Dan Maggio is here from the FIRST organization.
Oh, hi, Matt. You sounded like you're.
By
in a
the
war.
Way,
so my my son participated in the VEX competition, and they considering all is well and good. You know that they did pretty well. They were really excited. They didn't win any special awards or anything, but they were there the whole day, and they just had a really really great time.
Good.
So,
nice.
They're like, they always leave. I mean, you build up to something for 6 months and they leave like, yeah, we want to do that again. And like, see you next season. You know, yeah. I mean, it's kind of tough. It's like the only thing that you have in the season is the World Series and then it's over, you know, but it still was a ton of fun. They were down in Monroe. So
I wanted to ask Heather a question on her Oxford American Dictionary.
Ah. English.
English. I'm sorry. Yeah. So before computers, to imagine how they actually assembled that and printed it.
Yeah.
They must have had an army of researchers and editors.
Yeah. Well, it's
typesetters.
Huge. It's huge.
And multi-volume.
Yeah, and the graphic people, they got to assemble something like that. Yeah.
That's right.
Doable.
I mean, I have it on my computer, but I still like the.
And of course, it's got a lot of words in it. Nobody uses it anymore.
I mean, I still use paper roll books.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. Totally understand.
Although,
do you think all those words are allowed in Scrabble?
What? I'm sorry?
Are all those words allowed in Scrabble?
I would think so.
No, isn't there an official Scrabble dictionary, though?
There might be. There is. I don't know. Jim and I were talking before we started about how many students, you know, are surprised that I still write in cursive. Dun-dun.
Because they're not taught it anymore.
I've mentioned this on the air before. My kids are taught cursive, and there's a lot of pushback at the school for teaching it. They say, why are you doing this? It's useless.
Well, I've had like four or five students say, wow, you know, I love your handwriting. And I'm like, it's not that nice. And they're like, no, but it's cursive.
Not if you're going to communicate personally with anyone.
It's true.
You know, I just like am I a relic because I'm writing, you know,
how do they
cursive?
Sign their names?
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you squiggle in with a finger?
Well,
how do you make it
see, the sad side is.
I don't know what to tell you. I think that the vast majority of our students for the last few years, they have not taken any cursive between K to 12. Yeah.
I and at least one other member of my department have had this situation of students coming up and saying, I can't read the notes you wrote on my paper because we wrote it in cursive.
That's incredible.
Couldn't read it.
Yeah. We get, I know that I always tell too many tales. My parents are starting to listen a lot more and they're like, why do you say all that stuff online? But the school that my kids attend, they get it every year because they still, and Heather is going to swoon, so you're going to stand behind her. They teach cursive, Danilian, really, and they diagram sentences. They still
absolutely. That's worthwhile.
So they're like, why do you do this? Let's teach them how to make robots. I mean, robots are important too, but I mean, come on.
I love diagram
fundamental
sentences.
Sorry,
I'm a freak.
Ms. Beloise, I can remember her doing it, and all of those things, they would go off the chalkboard.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
All those clauses.
Fun. Supplementary clauses.
Doggone, now you got me thinking, do you guys remember the little chalk holder with a three piece of chalk in it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that thing.
And the five finger one.
No,
which
you
could
get
you
for Christmas then.
You could do staffs for writing music.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Al Dente is here as one of our guest panelists. We're very glad to have you here.
I'm glad to be here.
What do you think about the state of cursive writing? Signatures, you said.
Yeah, signatures. How's somebody going to sign their name to something without...
I don't know.
Well, what about just proof of identity?
Sure.
You know, like, here's my driver's license. Here, I can do a signature just like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because if, you know, here's my driver's license, how do you prove who you are?
But more and more things are being signed online anyway, so you really don't
have
a
lack of signature.
Well, and think about when you sign, you know, when you put your credit card in and you sign, that's not really a signature. No. I mean, what is that?
Scribbles,
mostly. I just feel like there's so much of the past that you've lost access to if you can't read and write cursive.
If you can't read it, I'm with you 100%. And I think the best way to learn how to read it is to write it. So, we just had that discussion the other day. We were signing birthday cards. And my 7-year-old said, Dad, why do you put that thing there? And I'm like, that's my name. He's like, that's not an M. Like, that's not an A. That's not a T. And I'm like, okay, we've got lots
of Okay, this is going to sound terrible, but I remember as a kid, my grandfather taught me how to use a quill.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. So I learned how to sign my name with a brush before I learned how with a pen.
Ooh, nice.
Very so creative. I learned some penmanship.
Is that a...
You learned to write with a flourish.
Canadian? No, it's an ancient Chinese grandfather thing. That's all.
Calligraphy.
Yes, calligraphy.
Well, folks, this is a program. You can send us questions regarding anything. Calligraphy counts. If you stump the panel, you win a prize.
Yeah, write one in as opposed to emailing it.
Oh, yeah.
Send us a letter.
Yeah, a letter, you know, paper.
Handwritten.
So let me give you ways that there literally would be no way of sending us a letter. Like, everything that I give is electronic here. You can send us the questions in a number of ways. You can email us
street address.
At atp@universityofidaho.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/ATP. Find us on Facebook. The address of the university is well known. I'm just afraid that if you put Ask the Professor, that the mailroom won't know where to bring it.
Well, then they could just put CLAE.
CLAE, College of Liberal Arts and Education. Ask the Professor. Let's see how long it takes us from this show, 1925.
Wow. We dare
Professor
somebody.
Matt Miles.
Oh, yeah. So we'll see if
somebody
it gets
somebody do
here.
It, do it, do it.
So we've got some questions here. It says it's a potpourri. It's a potpourri of topics
potpourri.
From Anonymous. In 1946, the British Council, in an effort to improve public opinion of British cuisine, asked a well-known author of the day, a fictional political commentary, to write an essay about British food. His essay, entitled British Cookery, was submitted, but summarily rejected by the council. Recently, the 8th of February, 2019, the council issued an apology for the rejection. Who was the author?
This Rudyard
Kipling.
This
is fascinating. It wasn't Kipling. Kipling is, he's long gone.
So, I mean, child author?
No.
Julia Child?
No. You'll recognize the author.
James Beard?
Nope. The author,
Wall?
Famous political commentary, so initials G.O.
George Orwell.
George Orwell, yes. Have any idea why the essay may have been rejected? This is Lou
Animal Farm.
Was it? He didn't
was
like
it,
the recipes.
Was yeah, it Oscar Wilde that said if you wanted to eat well in Britain, have a full English breakfast three times a day?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I'm giving it to al dente. With the essay, Orwell sent in six recipes, one of which was for orange marmalade. The council disliked the recipe, saying it was bad, too much sugar and water. What does that mean? It's
no
so
fructose.
Funny. Oh, that was from the New York Times, 8th of February, 2019. Oh, that's hilarious. Absolutely hilarious.
I wonder if he sent in a mushy peas recipe.
Well, of course. My wife is the only person in our immediate family who's been to Britain, and she's like,
boiled beef
man.
With gravy.
Mushed peas with every meal. I would be happy with mushed peas. I like peas. I think they're cool.
Pea soup is good.
Pea soup.
Bangers and mash.
Yeah. Ham hock.
Absolutely. The Leaning Tower of Pisa. It's a well-known tourist attraction. When it was built, what was its intended purpose?
Was it a jail?
A bell tower, wouldn't it?
It's a bell tower, mm-hmm. Yeah. A jail sounds good. People be falling off the top
it's
of
used
it.
For rent
it out, oh. You know? It was a bell tower for the cathedral and baptistry. Construction began, air quotes, in 1173. How long did it take to build the Leaning Tower of Pisa? It was a long time.
500
years?
Yes. 500 years?
Not 500. A little too steep.
200.
200 years is what it says here. You know, how do you measure that? But, you know, it's like my parents' kitchen when they were
working. Well, they didn't get that
you know,
far
like,
before it began leaning. So
that's
they
right.
were trying for a long time just to figure out how to straighten it up. And then they just decided to finish it the way it was.
Exactly.
And then all the avocado appliances
and
had to be shipped out.
After about the, what is it, third level, it kind of crooks. You know,
right.
the spiral to go up, it shifts
that's right. that's
because
right.
of the. The tower itself had shifted.
That's so, yes. How long after construction did it begin to sink in the ground?
Immediately.
You said it was soon. It's not immediate, but it was 5 years is what it says here. So that's not very long considering it's been around for nearly 1,000 years. Getting close, right? Modern efforts to counteract the tilt have been going on since about 1990. Recently, it was announced there had been additional correction of about 1.5 inches. Overall, since 1990, by how much has the original tilt been counteracted in inches?
14.
15.
I'm giving it to you. It says, except anything between 15 and 17. It was 15.95 inches have been corrected.
Wow.
So, I don't know. Maybe we'll live to see.
The thing is, if it were perfectly straight, it would not look symmetrical. I mean,
it's
it
true.
Would not look right now because they
true.
Adapted
all the
design to accommodate the tilt.
Accommodate.
Everybody has to accommodate the tilt. We shall while we take a break. We're back with a great potpourri of topics, still talking about the Leaning Tower of Pisa. These are all questions from an article in the New York Times, November 23rd. 2018, The Leaning Tower Tilts a Little Less is the name of the article. The renovations to reduce the tilt mean the tower is no longer the leaningest one in the world. There's two other towers that have greater tilt. In what countries are these two towers located? They're in, well,
Dubai?
They're in
the Middle East,
Asia,
Europe.
Oh,
in Europe,
Western Europe,
Central.
Switzerland.
Switzerland, correct.
Hungary.
The Leaning Tower of Switzerland.
Belgium, France, Poland.
Still haven't heard it yet.
Germany.
Germany.
Oh, okay. Germany. Okay. And what are they? Germany. Where are they?
It does not say. As a matter of fact, it says, if the profs can name one, that's great. But no other information was volunteered.
So we don't get a great today.
Oh, well, I'll take it.
Okay. At this rate, considering we make a right triangle based on that number of tilting inches, it's not expected the Leaning Tower will ever be completely straight. If that would happen at its current rate, how long in years would it take to straighten it completely?
200.
How many?
It's a lot longer than that.
1,000.
It's 4,000 years it would take to get it completely vertical. That is a long time.
I can think of bigger investments of time and money.
I'm sure the souvenir makers aren't changing their molds.
It looks kind of
charming. I believe that it said per year. The rate per year? Let's see here. So we've been talking about 1990.
And it's 15.9 inches since then.
Since 1990. So it's about less than 1.5 inches per year. So that's
it will
lot.
Have a better fate a than the wooden, you know, the wooden
I believe
stove
that you have to remember that you're counteracting continuing tilt as well as repositioning it. Like in one day, we could get it back to vertical, but it's going to start falling again, I think is the point that they're making. So,
oh, I see.
Yeah, I think. End-of-life decisions are never easy, but some people are planning ahead to make themselves useful even after their passing. Instead of burial or cremation, they want to be composted. A well-known folk singer in his song In Dead Earnest said, "If I should die before I wake, all my bone and sinew take, put them in the compost pile to decompose a little while. When radishes and corn you munch, you're probably having me for lunch." Who was this singer? Initials P.S.
Pete Cannibal Seeger.
It's Pete Seeger, yeah. Seeger, that's right.
I was going to say George Orwell?
Oh. Not George Orwell.
So not Hannibal Lecter?
I think some people make Hannibal better Lecter. Mulch than others.
Well, at some level, we're all food for worms.
I've already told myself I'm coating myself in bacon fat and walking off into Yellowstone.
Oh, gosh.
What? Today I'm Dave Chow. Tomorrow I'm Grizzly Chow. Literally.
Oh, my.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Twisted?
Yes. Nah, not at all.
People have lots of different ways of going about things. The big green thing to do right now is to wrap yourself in terry cloth and just go directly into the earth, because that's the easiest way to get decomposed it fast.
Terry cloth.
Yeah, feed the tree.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I at least want a pinstripe.
There's a memorial garden somewhere around here in Southeast Michigan, because I've gotten postcards advertising them, St. Andrews or something like that,
where
you can be buried to feed plants.
Yeah,
basically.
Oh, yeah. On purpose. Sure.
It's kind of cool.
Heather, you can keep the deer away. I mean, from afar.
That would be good.
I don't think she would be very deer repellent.
No, she'd make sure the bulbs would be good.
Well, alive, she's deer repellent. I don't think she would be.
No, you just haunt. You just protect the bulbs from afar.
Okay.
So, decisions about what to do with the deceased vessel once the spirit is left differ by region. In what part of the United States do people favor caskets and concrete vaults?
Here.
South. New Orleans.
Oh, okay. South. Yes. Where do people favor burial in a local cemetery with ancestors?
Northeast,
yes, where family roots go back many generations.
They're actually receiving tombs up there.
Mm.
You know what receiving tombs are?
I've heard the term before.
Yeah. I grew up in the Northeast, so they look like little mini mausoleums, and people are put in there temporarily, or they used to be, because the ground was frozen.
And then decompose?
No, they're just holding. Oh,
Abraham Lincoln was put in one, but that was because they needed to build the tomb for him to go into.
Right, but they're kind of creepy looking.
That's cool.
But we still have them.
You know I like it if it's creepy.
I know.
What state has the largest percentage of residents cremated? I'm pointing at Professor Hill Vasquez.
Washington.
Vermont. Massachusetts.
Oregon.
I heard it. It's Washington.
Are you pointing at me?
But, you know, UW and all
of
that.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Well,
so, sorry.
The largest percentage of cremation is Washington
State.
We
were on the Northeast, so I'm sorry. Yes, I did go to UW. Go Huskies.
Go Huskies. In a study at Washington State, Wazoo, in 2018, six donated bodies were wrapped in organic materials, bathed in air warmed with microbes, and periodically turned. How long did it take for the bodies to become soil? This will likely shock all of you.
2 months.
10 minutes.
A year. It's like a rotisserie chicken.
A year. Exactly. A year.
Based it?
Yeah, like 2 years.
Much faster.
So it says here that the answer is 30 days.
Yeah, I was going to say 32 nice. Days. 30,
they became soil in 30 days.
Soil in, I mean, let's say probably not the teeth, probably not the bones.
I'd like to know what microbes they use.
Right.
Well, I mean, it seems to me like a lot of what we do in terms of caskets and vaults protects at some level.
And the embalming.
No, the anaerobes go to work.
Anaerobes go to work, but I think that they added some extra special
sauce.
Well,
yeah, I mean,
you know,
for composting.
I'm sure they did, yes.
And for composting in general, you can get stuff that will accelerate.
Just
it's
spray
an accelerant.
Spray me down fructose and bury me.
And the churning is very important with the compost as well. And actually getting certain types of worms will help with the compost as well.
Mm-hmm, they really help.
So
that's
sorry.
I
compost.
New York Times, 27 January 2019. Washington State considers human composting. Yep.
If you die first, I'll bring worms to your funeral.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Very nice. Yeah. I'll throw them in the casket before they close.
Worms crawl in, worms crawl out.
Right. In 1886, very famous author Robert Louis Stevenson wrote, "The public are weary of statutes that say nothing." Well, here's a man coming forward whose statutes live and speak things worth uttering. Of what sculptor was Stevenson referring? Hint, hint, the front of the DIA.
Rodin.
Not Mothra, but Rodin.
Rodin.
Auguste Rodin, the thinker, is in front of...
Augie, we like to call
the
him.
The Detroit
Augie.
Institute of Arts. Yes. We're all familiar with the 1878 painting we call Whistler's Mother.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
That was not the original title.
Portrait in Gray.
Whistler's
Portrait
Mother.
In Gray and Black.
Yeah, that's right. What did James McNeill Whistler call his painting? Arrangement in Gray and Black, number one, or The Artist's Mother. Yes, that's what he referred to it as. Heather's on a tear today, by the way. Getting a lot of
we'll
these.
Just sit back and
she
watch.
She is.
No, now I'm going to suck.
Oh, stop.
Oh, jinx.
Stop. What painter is best known for his paintings of women in idyllic Tahitian setting?
Gauguin.
Paul Gauguin.
Yes. Gauguin.
Let's see. Oh, very interesting. This was 2017, Art Institute of Chicago, Gauguin, Artist as Alchemist. Ooh, now I suddenly want to read that. That sounds pretty interesting. Very cool. There are only 13 places in the world where open space and restrictions on artificial light preserve the natural appearance of the night sky.
Oh, we had this.
One of them, 1,400 square miles, was designated in the United States, if you can believe it, only in 2017. In what state?
Michigan.
Montana.
Alaska?
It's not Montana, but you're getting close.
Wyoming.
It's not Utah. Wyoming.
Idaho.
Idaho is what I heard. Idaho. Good old Idaho. 13 places in the world. Wow. I mean... Michigan does have a dark sky.
We had
park.
A similar question. Yeah. Dark sky park
up at Little Traverse,
Emmett County,
Emmett County, Heartland. Little Traverse.
But this is 1,400 acres where there's no light.
Well, no light is also allowed. Yeah, which is kind of cool.
Right before the bridge, if you turn west.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's right.
It's very dark.
What is the median pay for a full-time worker in the United States as of 4 November 2018?
$53,000.
So it's not clear what metric we're using. What is the median pay for a full-time worker? I'm feeling like this might be on the week or month, but I'm going to get it wrong.
What, an annual?
No, it's not annual. Because if it is, it would be very small.
Bi-weekly? Or,
if it's monthly, let's say...
Let's say it's monthly and see if
$4,700.
Yeah, so it says $893, so that could be low.
It could be
per, or it could be per week.
Yeah, that must be per week.
Times five, four.
What is 4,700 times 12?
Huh?
Oh.
Yeah. That would be the median yearly salary.
Be about 57.
You think that's the median annual salary for the United States?
This is why I went to art school.
No way. That's way too high.
Dave doesn't say anything to me.
I know nothing.
It does feel high. To me, it feels high.
That's more like the median household income, I feel.
Ah, okay. There we go.
It says median pay for a full-time worker.
Okay, Google.
Google.
What's the medium?
Alexa.
Oh, my gosh.
Help.
Oh, my gosh. Andy Warhol, creator of the famous soup can painting, revealed his favorite soup flavor. What was it?
Vegetable.
Tomato.
Alphabet.
Chicken.
This is not a common off-the-shelf.
Mushroom barley.
Italian wedding soup.
Minestrone.
That would be an awesome answer, by the way. I love wedding soup, but that's not
Not
it.
Minestrone, mm-mm. Beef stew.
Chowder.
Navy
cream
beef.
Of asparagus.
It's a well-known, out-of-the-ordinary soup that we wouldn't necessarily buy at the grocery store.
Dill pickle.
Cream of broccoli.
Getting closer.
French onion.
I am.
Lentil.
It involves a mock animal.
Turtle soup.
Turtle soup, yeah. That's what it says here. Oh. Mock turtleneck soup.
Oh, come on. He probably just said that.
No, it says mock turtle.
I bet he just said
oh,
that.
Oh, well, yeah, but that sounds like Andy Warhol.
That sounds
about
right.
It definitely
does. You know. It's Andy Warhol.
We're wrapping up, but we got a couple number problems that I think are going to keep you guys busy for our last couple minutes. How many college teams are represented by the Big Ten Conference?
14.
10.
14 is the answer.
Oh, 14 now?
Yeah, that's right. I forgot
how many
Rutgers and stuff.
College teams are represented in the Big 12?
16.
Sure.
Lower.
Oh, 14.
Lower.
12.
Lower.
10.
What?
10 is the correct answer.
This is a joke.
It's not a joke.
There you go.
That is a complete, utter reality. Many teams have left the Big 12, but the Big 10 just keeps gathering them, so it's an interesting world.
So does
world.
The ACC.
So does the ACC. Yeah. We're heading towards four or five major conferences.
Why even come up with numbers in your name? Just call it the Horizon League.
Exactly.
Come and go as you please.
Yeah.
Isn't that good enough?
Yeah.
A couple of really good Titans wins. It was the women were actually on WADL. We watched a little bit of the game.
Oh, yeah. How did that game
cool.
go? I didn't.
We won.
They killed
won?
Them. Yeah, they
good.
Did good.
Good, 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 good.
Yeah, they haven't had
have a couple basketball players.
Most successful season this
no,
year.
No, they haven't.
But the men won at Milwaukee, and that was kind of a big deal. So the Horizon League Conference Championship is played at what we have now affectionately call the LCA in downtown Detroit, Little Caesars Arena, the pride of Detroit, a brand new arena where the Red Wings and the Pistons play. I know I have a couple students in my lab from the dance team, and they're like, okay, this is the time of year where we tell you if the men make it deep into the tournament, we're going to miss lab after break. And I'm like, gosh, it's such a weird thing, but yeah, sure, let's see what happens. You know. So anyway, very cool stuff.
You're conflicted.
I'm conflicted. I certainly want the Titans to win. We've had a very good season, relatively speaking, after last year. And of course, we have one of the number one freshman scorers in the country. He's probably going to rake the freshman year three-point shot record. Antoine Davis. There's his picture right there. Walks through our building every once in a while. I'm sorry to say that the time has come to say goodbye.
Oh.
I know.
Do you want us to sing?
M-I-C-K-E-Y.
I was thinking more.
If I asked you to sing a goodbye, Dan, what would you say?
You to sing goodbye.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Sound of Music.
I can't sing, but I can picture singing.
You can picture singing in his mind's eye. We'll start with my left side of the table and say goodbye with Al.
Our Vita sing.
Dan.
Goodbye.
Jim.
Oh, later.
Dave.
I thought he was having an aneurysm. See ya.
Mara.
It's been real.
Heather.
Adios.
And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter at AskTheProfessor or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced and directed today by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Till next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.